We're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by ESPN's Dan Shulman, the voice of Sunday Night Baseball, which gets rolling again in just two short nights. Dan, thanks for being with us again.
My pleasure, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Before we talk baseball, though, let's talk basketball. Final Four weekend as well. Certainly not a Final Four field that a lot of people expected.
No, my pool sheet certainly didn't look like this. I know that. But I think it's fun. I mean, you got a couple of number one seeds. You got an Oregon team, a three seed playing without a key player who somehow have been able to overcome and just play great basketball. And then you got a seven seed in South Carolina who nobody saw getting this far, playing, you know, with unbelievable passion and energy, beat Duke in the second round, and they've just kept on rolling. I think it's going to be interesting. I think a lot of people would say, well, it'll probably be North Carolina and Gonzaga, and maybe that's best for TV and the product and everything like that. But I don't know if we know who's going to win this game, these games. I mean, right now, the way that Oregon and South Carolina are playing, you got to give them a fighting chance.
Do you think this is good for college basketball to have some of those lower seeds and unexpected teams in there?
You know, I mean, I only think one of them is really like that. I mean, Oregon's a three, and I think they've been a national championship contender all season long. You go back to the beginning of the season, and they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated in the preview issue. But we've had this before. You know, we've had George Mason, we've had Butler a couple of times, and so on. So I don't think this is actually that unusual compared to what we've had over the last 10 years. Is it good for basketball? Yeah, I think it is. It's nice to see something different, but I think, you know, to get Gonzaga and North Carolina in there in the final, although Gonzaga's not, you know, so to speak, a blue blood or anything like that, they are a number one seed, and I think there would be a tremendous amount of interest if the Zags were to make the final.
Well, we sure know it was good for baseball to have the Cubs win the whole thing last year. Lots of great interest in that, and they are your opener on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball against the St. Louis Cardinals. Are the Cubs still the team to beat this year?
I think they are, but I think it's really close. I think you can make a case for the Dodgers. I think you can make a case for the Indians. I think you can make a case for a number of teams. But I still think the Cubs are the best team heading into the season. Now, they got to stay healthy, but that goes for every team. They got to stay hungry, and I think they will. You know, their nucleus of position players is so good and so young. Some of these guys aren't even in their prime yet. I think they're going to get better on that side. On the mound, they do have a little bit of age, you know, Lester, Lackey, guys in their mid-30s, but can they do again what they've done over the last number of years? The one thing you know about the Cubs, too, is if they need something in July, they'll go get it. So I think a lot of teams can win it. I think baseball is very unpredictable, like college basketball, but I think the Cubs are the best team entering the season.
Who do you think is the biggest challenger to them in the National League?
I would say the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers last year used 15 different starting pitchers, which is crazy if you think about it, and lost Kershaw for 2.5 months and still won the division and still gave the Cubs a battle in the NLCS. They've got to be healthier this year than they were last year. They just have to. I think they would be the biggest challenger. You know, the Nationals are going to be really good, I believe. And the Mets, if their starting rotation is healthy, if Syndergaard gives them 32 starts, DeGrom gives them 32 starts, Harvey is healthy, and the Harvey of a few years ago, that's not the team you want to meet in the playoffs. Those are some big ifs, but if those guys are healthy, they can be right there.
Over in the American League, do you see Terry Francona's Indians as the team to beat going in?
I do, but I think a number of teams are right there with them. I mean, on the one hand, you say, well, look at how well they did last year without Carrasco and Salazar, but that was really just the last week of the season and in the playoffs. And not to diminish what they did in the playoffs without those guys, but they had him for the regular season. The wild card is Michael Brantley, a guy they didn't have last year. Well, they had him for 11 games. That's it. Bad shoulder. They don't know. It sounds like it's going pretty well, and it sounds like he's going to be able to play, and he's an all-star caliber player. I think they are the team to beat in the American League. Well, I shouldn't say that, because when my picks go online in a couple of days, you'll see I've got somebody else in the World Series for the American League. But I think they're right there. But, you know, you can make a case for Boston. You can make a case for Houston. And I think, you know, if you look at Toronto and Texas and a couple of other teams, I mean, I think there are a lot of really good teams in the American League.
Yeah, I think your Blue Jays are going to be very good. And anybody who writes them off, I think, is making a big mistake.
Yeah, I think they're a half step back on paper from where they were last year. But the doom and gloom that has existed in some corners about them, I don't understand. I mean, the headline is they lost Edwin Encarnacion. And they did. And that's a guy you can't replace. They brought in Kendrys Morales, who's a really good hitter, and I think his numbers could go up going from Kansas City to Toronto, going from a pitcher's park to a hitter's park. Francisco Liriano's been lights out in the spring, and if they get a whole year out of him, that's an improvement on R.A. Dickey, who was in that spot for most of last season. And they were without Jose Bautista and Devin Travis for significant stretches last year. Both appear to be healthy right now. Travis looks like he's ready to go. And he's a guy, maybe not a big name around the U.S., but he can really, really hit. If he stays healthy, he's going to make a big difference for them.
Dan, how important is Russell Martin to that team, not just in terms of what he provides on the field, but what he does off the field and as an inspirational leader of the club?
Yeah, I think critical. I mean, the playoffs have a habit of following Russell Martin around, whether he's a Yankee, a Pirate, a Dodger, a Blue Jay. And he's working with a staff that has so many different looks to it. You know, Liriano, a lefty with that tough slider, Aaron Sanchez with a wicked sinker. Marcus Stroman's got six different pitches. You saw what he was like in the championship game of the WBC. Marco Estrada, one of the best changeups in the game. You can make a case, and it's crazy because Josh Donaldson won the MVP 2 years ago and finished, I think, fourth last year. But you can make a case that Martin is just as valuable because the last couple of years, the backup Josh Tolley was the personal catcher for R.A. Dickey. But it was a real step down. For, you know, Tolley's not a great hitter, and basically he was there to catch Dickey. Now they got Jared Saltalamacchia, who's a much better hitter, not known for his great defensive skills. But most teams, it's a real step down from number one to number two. I don't know that any catcher's as valuable as Yadier Molina is to the Cardinals, but I think Russell Martin's in the next group of guys.
We're talking with Dan Shulman here on Downtown. Now, last year's World Series showcased two of the best managers in the game. Who's a manager out there, perhaps because of location, who gets overlooked in that conversation?
Well, Terry Francona shouldn't get overlooked. Cleveland doesn't fit the bill of being a big market team that gets a lot of attention, but last October, I think they did. Joe Maddon is a great manager. Bruce Bochy is a great manager. You know, one guy I think who deserves mention, and he's only been doing it 1 year, and he actually won National League Manager of the Year award, and he works in a big market. But I still don't think a lot of people might not even know he's the manager of the team because he's new to the job. But Dave Roberts is great. Dave Roberts has a really great way of managing people, of understanding people. And he's got, no ego, no bravado, no attitude. It's about the room and the team and the win. That's it. And I'm a big fan of Dave Roberts.
The way that the bullpens were used in the postseason last year certainly broke away from tradition. Is that something that teams can get away with in the regular season?
No, absolutely not. Let's take Cleveland for an example. One aspect of it they can use is they can use Miller in the sixth or the seventh or the eighth. They can't use Miller in the sixth and the seventh and the eighth as consistently as they did in the playoffs. You know, playoffs is a month, not 6 months, and you have more off days in October, of course. So I think you will see it in a limited fashion where some managers might bring in their so-called best guy earlier in the game in a key spot once in a while. But other than that, I don't see a big change. I thought what Terry Francona did was genius and remarkable, and it worked great. But it was a combination of it was October. You know, Tito has he's built up the resume where he can do what he thinks is right, and nobody's going to question him. And Andrew Miller might be the most, the nicest, best guy in baseball. So he's willing to do it. Not everybody's willing to do that. So I don't think you'll see a whole lot of it.
Been a lot of discussion, and the commissioner's office has been involved in trying to shorten games, pick up the pace of games. Do you think there's a real need to do that? Are we making too much of that?
I actually think they do need to do it, and maybe that makes me a dinosaur and a grumpy old man, but I think they do need to do it. It's some people call this an ADD generation, whatever the term you want to use is. There's a lot going on in the world right now, and I think to keep the attention of younger people, the game has to be quicker. The intentional walk thing was, in my mind, was just a shot across the bow of the players' union to say, hey, come to the table and talk about this. Otherwise, we're going to put in changes. So they put one in. That's not going to make a difference in time of game. Intentional walks just don't happen all that often. But the one I would like to see the most is limiting visits to the mound. And not just pitching coaches, I mean catchers. It got out of hand in the playoffs, in my mind. And in the playoffs, it's okay. But I think you could save 10 minutes a game without mucking with anything. You know, the players, and I understand this, they're concerned about, well, I need to step out and think about what's coming, and I need to step off and think about what I want to throw. The game didn't used to be played that way. I mean, I've read articles and studies on it. The biggest difference in the increase in time in game between now and, say, 30, 40 years ago, it's not television commercials, and it's not even pitching changes, although both of those are a factor. It's just the time between pitches where nothing happens. The time where the pitcher pitches, the catcher catches the ball, and it goes back to the mound again. It's just, 3 seconds longer, 5 seconds longer, 7 seconds longer. You add that up 250 times, and that's where most of the increase comes from.
I was amused that there was a little bit of hue and cry when that rule was changed on intentional walks. And the only two examples people could think of, well, one of them was fictional from the Bad News Bears.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing to me, again, it's just to get the discussion about other things to the table. That's all it is. And that's fine. That's fine that they did it. I'd like to see them restore it once they get other stuff worked out, although I'm not sure they're going to get other stuff worked out. I think the players' union is going to be extremely hesitant. And again, there's no point in spending all this time, energy, and money on finding solutions if they're not going to be enforced. So, are you going to enforce a pitch clock? Do we want a pitch clock? I'm not sure we want a pitch clock, to be honest with you. But I'd like to see the players get on board with the concept that something needs to be done. Baseball's not trying to do this to hurt the players. Baseball's trying to do this to maintain the popularity of the game.
Well, I'll be in no hurry. We've been waiting a while for this one. The Sunday night's game can progress at a leisurely pace as far as I'm concerned.
I got nowhere to go till I get on a plane Monday morning to go to Arlington, Texas, so I'm all good with it.
That sounds great. Dan, as always, we appreciate you making time for us. Have a great season. We'll be watching come Sunday
all
night.
Right. Thanks.
That's Dan Shulman, ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, the Cubs and the Cards in the opener coming up this weekend.